mother, the betrayed mother. Isn't that an odd title for a Mother's Day message? And even though it says mothers on your screen right now, I'll try to make the things I'm about to say, the four things I'm about to say to you, connect with mothers. You know, I grew up near the state line in East Liverpool. So crossing river was West Virginia, but across the state line, which was probably just 100 feet or so, I don't know how far, about a yard, 100 yards from my house, was Pennsylvania. And when you live in that part of Ohio, I mean, everybody thinks, you would think because Ohio has the Cleveland Browns and the Cincinnati Bengals, the Cincinnati Reds and the Cleveland Guardians, you would think that just being in Ohio would make you a fan of those football teams, but it's not true. If you live in East Liverpool, the vast majority of folks are Steelers fans because you live closer to Pittsburgh. All your TV, not all of it, most of it comes out of Pittsburgh, and so that's the way it is. And so you're a Pittsburgh fan, but you're living in the state of Ohio. It's not what it appears to be, not perhaps even what some folks might hope it would be, although I think I grew up pretty much winning on that bet because, well, I'll just leave Cleveland out of this discussion. It's odd when you're in one place, but you're not what you think you should be or what people think you should be, or you're in that place and you're not what everybody else is or what you're expected to be. A few years ago, in fact, it was 2006, I believe, I went to a new church in October of that year. A young man in the church whose family we've become really good friends with got sick, and they life flighted him at the Cleveland Clinic, and a virus had gotten into his body, attacked his heart, and killed it. So in early October, he's lying up there in the Cleveland Clinic awaiting a heart transplant. He was only, I don't know, 19 or 20 years old. And he waited and waited and waited until the day after Christmas, December 26th. We prayed as a church for him. I went up and prayed at his bedside a whole lot. The family prayed, and we prayed, and we prayed, and we prayed for a heart. And I was in the hospital the day they brought it. They brought it in a cooler, you know, one of these picnic coolers, just a little red and white cooler, and they carried it in. I watched it come in the building. And he got it transplanted, and he's alive and well today. But on that December 26th day, as happy and as rejoicing as we were and as his parents were, as his mother was, you had this eerie feeling deep down inside, and everybody had it, that there was another mother somewhere who wasn't joyous at all. And I'm sure that her heart was broken and that she was sad. And yet her son or daughter's life, I can't remember which it was giving life and answering the prayers of another mother, probably a mother who may have stood at a bedside and prayed for her son or daughter who was in an accident that they might live and get better and be well, but it just did not work out that way. Being a mom's tough business. Things, in particular your kids, aren't always the way you'd have them to be, or they are not the way you would have expected them to be. My mother was one of the best mothers in the world, and yet the one thing that's missing for me, and she's now gone as you know, was that the thing that I've done for the last 40 years was never really what she wanted for her son, and I knew that all the way through. Loved me dearly, taught me much, do anything for me, and more. And yet, that little piece was missing in our relationship. I ran across this poem. You may have heard it before, I had not, but I'd like to read it to you today. And I know that hearing me read poetry is not what you came for, but I thought it's fitting this morning. Long time ago, so I have been told, two angels once met on streets paved with gold. By the stars in your crown, said the one to the other, I see that on earth you too were a mother. And by the blue-tinted halo you wear, you too have known sorrow and deepest despair. Ah, yes, she replied, I once had a son, a sweet little lad full of laughter and fun. But tell of your child. Oh, I knew I was blessed from the moment I first held him close to my breast. and my heart almost burst with the joy of that day. Ah, yes, said the other, I felt the same way. The former continued the first steps he took, so eager and breathless, the sweet startled look which came over his face, he trusted me so. Ah, yes, said the other, how well do I know. But soon he had grown to a tall, handsome boy, so stalwart and kind, and it gave me much joy to have him just walk down the street by my side. Ah, yes, said the mother, I felt the same pride. How often I shielded and spared him from pain, and when he for others was so cruelly slain, when they crucified him and they spit in his face, how gladly I would have hung there and taken his place. A moment of silence. Oh, then you are she, the mother of Christ, and she fell to one knee. But the blessed one raised her up, drawing her near, and kissed from the cheek of the woman a tear. Tell me the name of the son you love so, that I may share with your grief and your woe. She lifted her eyes, looking straight at the other. He was Judas Iscariot. I am his mother. I don't know if you've heard that before. You saw that coming, maybe, after I got through there. But it reminds us again that we aren't always what we'd want to be, and perhaps the children we have may or may not be what we'd hoped for, what we'd expected, what we had planted and fed into those children that we have. Imagine John 19 for a minute, just three verses, standing by the cross of Jesus, where his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, woman, behold your son. Then he said to the disciple, behold your mother. And from that hour, the disciple took her to his own home. I want to ask you a question. You get that scripture, and we know all about it, that Jesus' mother, Mary, is there at the cross watching her son, having lived through stuff that you and I can't even imagine, really, when you get down to it. But I want you to imagine and ask yourself this question, just to consider for a minute. Passover's come to an end. All the Jews and their families had gathered there in Jerusalem. Everybody on this day is getting ready to pack it up and head out. And it begs the question, which I don't know if you ever thought about it or not, but do you suppose Judas's mother was there at the cross? Did you ever think about that? Was Judas's mother there at the cross? I have some friends, and I know their family well. And the mother of one little boy, who I know very well, raised him the right way, brought him to church, did all the things that moms do and dads do. And that little boy grew up and had a business, right behind a business that I was involved with at the time. Her little boy, who I watched grow up from a baby into a man, went into the house of an elderly woman, and in a robbery, walked out and left the woman for dead underneath a couch on top of a heat run. She never planned it that way. Never expected that that would be the way it happened. And then you ask yourself the question again, do you suppose Judas's mother was at the cross? What would she have felt that day? What would she have thought if she were? We have no proof of who she was. We have no word that says she was there. But I would venture to say that every mother and every parent here today, at some time or another, has found a bit of disappointment. It's okay to say so. In a child. You know, somebody might have said to Judas's mom, you know, Proverbs 29:15 says, the rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. Somebody might have said, you know, if you'd have just raised him a little bit better, if you'd have said no sometime, if you'd have brought a little bit of discipline into that life, this may not have happened. Solomon would have said, a wise son makes his father glad, but a foolish son is a sorrow to his mother. He would have said, the one that gathers in summer is a wise son. That means that stores up, that saves things. But the one who sleeps in harvest, that's a lazy son. He brings shame. Somebody might have said, if you'd have just made him work a little bit more. This one's true. If you have a fool for a child, you're going to be in misery. And it's absolutely no fun to be the parent of adult. I don't even know what adult is. But it's no fun to be the parent of adult. Solomon said in another place, a foolish son is a grief to his father and bitterness to the one that bore him. There was a son of King David whose name was Adonijah. He had a younger brother, Absalom, that tried to overthrow the kingdom, but I believe he got the idea from his older brother, Absalom. And I want you to look at what this verse says in 1 Kings about David's relationship with his son, Adonijah. His father had never at any time displeased him by asking, why have you done this? His father never challenged him. He never brought discipline into his life. The king of Israel never raised this child. And that child, at a certain age, decided to turn on his own father. Now, I'm not suggesting to you anything about Judas Iscariot. I don't know a thing about Judas's mother. But I do want to give you a little bit of information. Years ago, there was a book written. The book is called The Blessing. It's written by John Trent and Gary Smalley. It talks about building well-being, emotional or mental well-being into your kids. It talks about spiritual well-being, building self-worth. And I will say this. I said to you a little bit about my mom a moment ago. One of the things my mother built into each one of us, and it's very noticeable, I think, in her children, is that you may not be better than anybody else, but you're certainly not less than anybody else. She built a good self-esteem into us, and each one of us have done pretty well at whatever we've chosen to do. But this book I read probably in the 80s or 90s. I've given it away to parents across the time that I've been a pastor. Because each child that's born longs for something. We long for a lot of things when we're brought into this world. You know, I long for nice cars and fast bikes. We long for many things that may not be the right things. But there are some things that the human heart longs for that only a parent can give. It's unconditional love and approval from a relationship that is right with a mother or father. If any of you have ever had parents that you struggled with, or any of you have ever had children that you struggled with, you know the pain and the heartache that is there because the relationship is wrong. And you want to love unconditionally, and you want to accept as a child or a parent to a child would accept, but sometimes you just see those things that really make it tough to close your mouth, that really make it tough to be quiet about. And I wonder what Judas's mother would have said about what he did. I think one of the things that the book told me was this: bless your children when they're young, and they'll be a blessing to you when you're old. Let me give you a few ideas. And I'm talking from experience as a child, not as a parent. If my kids depended on me to raise them, we would have four Judases roaming the countryside. But Janice took care of this. This is from my mom and what she's done with me. Meaningful touch. And I'm going to say from a mother to a child. Do you know one of my earliest memories is my mom rubbing my head? Do you know in my brain I can still remember my mom touching my head? There's something about touch that the human heart longs for. Rub my head, pat my head, give me a hug. It's what moms do. And how about that language? You know, these days I don't understand our society. Do you hear how people talk and we hand it off to the kids? And I don't mean bad English. I don't mean wrong vocabulary. I'm talking about filth. And we put up with it. Mom, Dad, speak kind words and good words to your children. Tell them how valuable they are. Tell them that they are made in God's image and they are wonderful and that God's got something in store for them. And you can't wait to see it. It is so easy when we have children and then more to use the older one as a babysitter to the younger one. Don't do that. Don't do that. You know, this morning, Addie came in here, and she gave me a hug, and I asked her about her dance recital and told her happy birthday, and she told me that she had a baby that eats and drinks and, well, you know, you get the picture. Real babies do that. Mom and Dad, that's your job. Mom and Dad, that's your job. Let them be kids. Love them as the beautiful people that God has made them to be. Tell them that they have a future and God is in their corner. Let them know they're going somewhere. What you see in them, tell them about it. Recognize it as a gift from God. Go to their ball games, cheer them on. When they lose, grieve with them. But when they win, make it the Super Bowl. Even if it's T-ball. But how about you who have moms? I'll just put it on the screen this way. Bless your mom. She deserves it. She brought you into this world. I've told this story before, but I'm going to tell it again because I find enjoyment in it. And I hope that somewhere in heaven, my mother's looking down with a smile. I worked from the time I was 14 and a half, 15 years old, till I was into my early 20s at a grocery store. And when I was about 16 years old, I was at the Beaver Valley Mall, and they had just opened up these dollar stores. Remember when the dollar stores first opened, they weren't on every corner. They were in the malls. Remember that? And I walked into the dollar store at the Beaver Valley Mall, and they were selling gag gifts. And one of the gag gifts was a bag of black plastic ants. I've told you this before, but I went back to the Penn Valley King in East Liverpool, and my mom shopped one day. She bought one of these. Remember the maple rolls that Nichols Bakery made? She bought those. And I went home with my razor knife from work, and I cut that cellophane wrapper, and I put a trail of black ants across the maple rolls. Yeah. And I was at work the next day. I went in there at 4 every day and after school, and I'm in there working, and here came Jean, my mom. When she was in this mood, we called her Mean Jean. Boy, here came Mean Jean, and she had the look, and she also had those rolls. And she walked into the manager of that store, and she wanted to see him now, and she laid down the law about his store had ants, and they were in her rolls, and yada, 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 and I'm taking the whole thing in. Right? I want to tell you, I paid for that one. I paid for that one on both ends. But you know, about 5 years later, I was off at an auction, and I called my mom at the bank, and I said, "Hey, Mom, I found the perfect car for you." And she said, "Well, buy it." I said, you want me to buy it sight unseen? She said, "Yeah, just buy it and bring it home. I trust you." She said, "I trust you." And I spent a pile of money for my mom to get her a car. And she loved that 1983 Caprice Classic. She just loved that car. Bless your mom. They deserve it. And I'll close with this. Jesus died for his mom. Now, don't read too much into that. But what I do want you to read here is this. Jesus was the perfect Son of God, and yet his mother was a sinner. Jesus died for his mom. Jesus also died for Judas's mom. Not because she raised Judas wrong, but because Judas's mom was a sinner. And I'll tell you something else. Jesus died for Judas. not because Judas killed Jesus, but because Judas was a sinner. You know, it may be an unconventional Mother's Day message, but I want to remind you something. Mary didn't want that cross for her son any more than you want any for your children. And Jesus didn't want that cross for his mom, so he took it for her. He took it for you and me too. Moms, thank you, and happy Mother's Day.